What's up, Breakthrough Success listeners? Mark DeBerry, the podcasting coach here, helping people launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts. And if you want to be a successful content creator, one of the things you have to do is think about collaborating. Think about having a team of people behind you to help create that content, to help with the marketing. So if you want to figure out how to lead and build a creative team that is really productive and that really supports what you're doing, this is a great episode for you. We have a really awesome guest today. He is a technologist, musician, and public speaker who has built dozens of web and mobile products. His product portfolio ranges from language learning products for the U.S. military to the most popular free CRM product in the world. He serves as the senior vice president of HubSpot product, which he led from startup with around $50 million in revenue. That's where it was starting out, and now he's led it to a successful publicly traded company, ticker symbol HUBS, because I'm a finance major, $600 million in revenue. Our guest has also become a staple in the product management community and was recently named by Comparably as one of the best product leaders of 2019. Our guest for this episode of Breakthrough Success is none other than Christopher O'Donnell. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Mark, I'm so excited to be here, and thanks to the listeners for checking it out. It should be a fun conversation.
Christopher, thank you so much for coming on Breakthrough Success, and it's really awesome that you're here today. One of the things, I mean, like HubSpot, I've read a lot of their content, and it's really impressive how they've been able to grow under your leadership. I'm wondering if you can share with us a little bit on how you're able to help cultivate that kind of team culture environment that HubSpot now has.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we are pretty well known for the culture and for the team. And, you know, within the company, you have sort of subcultures too. And I've spent my time on the product side, on the sort of the creative design and engineering side. We're the folks who deliver the product that people buy. And you know, so there are aspects of kind of the HubSpot culture that we certainly share. And then we have some stuff that's a little bit, you know, a little bit, I won't say unique to us, but that we spend a ton of time thinking about. I mean, HubSpot's really, really interesting in terms of culture. It's a very flat organization. There is, you know, an enormous amount of collaboration across teams, within teams. Some of the mentalities that, you know, that I've grown up with in terms of leadership have definitely stuck around through this period of growth. And it's been really cool to learn from those, learn from all of these chapters and try to apply what's working more and maybe move away from stuff that's starting to break as some things do as you scale. So it's been amazing to just kind of see the scale and try to iterate the culture as we go. I mean, I think to answer your question, the one thing above everything else that we focused on is this idea of iterating the culture and always trying to get better and not assuming that we have it figured out and not have culture become kind of a sacred cow.
And it is interesting how, I mean, HubSpot, like overall, like at, you're not the only person I've interviewed from HubSpot. I've interviewed some other people, but I mean, the theme that I see is like, you know, a lot about your stuff. You are like very friendly. I can see the team culture. Like it's a kind of culture that if you had to pick a team culture, you would want something like HubSpot's. And part of it is the people. And I feel like it's like when people are looking online to hire a freelancer or something like that, you don't always get someone who cares as much as you. In fact, it's very hard to, because if you're like, you know, you own a big piece of the company versus someone who is just getting a wage, like there's going to be different levels of commitment. But how do you find people who get that commitment factor? Because like, obviously it is about the people you pick also.
Yeah, I think it's about the people. Definitely. I mean, we look for people who are coachable and resilient. You know, people who are gritty. We look for people who have had real learnings in their careers and failures. You know, my favorite interview question is, tell me the story of the worst grade you ever got in school. You know, and it has nothing to do with the grade. It has nothing to do with whether they got good grades. It has nothing to do with any of that. It has to do with the idea of, you know, did people try something that was outside their comfort zone? And, did people stick with something and they, you know, how do they kind of, how self-reflective are they? Or do they tell, you know, is it, interesting and humble the way that they recount their stumbles. You know, I mean, we spend a lot of time talking to people or in our careers saying, oh, well, we did this, or we built that, or we did this. And, you know, it's really interesting to hear from people about how reflective they are about their failures. So that's definitely one. Once people are in, you know, in a word, it's about ownership. And I think this totally applies to freelance. In fact, I really feel that way. And I'll give you an example that's a little unrelated to HubSpot, but I'll give you an example in a second. But just this idea that you allow people to actually, you know, own a certain set of decisions or own a project or a product for enough time so that they can actually develop their own relationship with it, and so that it can actually capture their imagination, you know, and look at even the processes and workflows that you have. Like, for example, if you build a software product and then give it to a designer, the designer's never going to feel that sense of ownership. You're never going to get that greater result, you know? And so just by shifting that process, well, not just, it's tough to shift the process, but by having design involved in the ideation and the research and the sort of problem space, it's a completely different job, you know? And so I think that that's really, really critical, you know, is giving people some sense of ownership and also playing to people's strengths. I'm in outside of work. The example I'll give you is outside of work, I'm in this band called The Providers, theproviders.com. You can check it out. We're launching music this fall. And so I spend time working, you know, nights and weekends with freelancers. And so, yeah, I mean, I get to work with 50 or 60 amazing designers here at work. But then when I'm, you know, a one person nights and weekends operation, or, you know, it's three of us or whatever it is trying to put together this content for the band, as we, you know, we want to do social media campaigns and all of the HubSpot inbound marketing playbook, you know, you're working with designers and you're working with all these different kinds of people who are just going to do this one little gig for you. And so how do you introduce ownership into more of that gig economy and, you know, that very different way of working? And I think, you know, and we've talked about this a bunch, like we're developing our logo and we're developing all that, you know, the sort of look and feel. It's like, you know, well, let's not just have one person do the thing that's in our head. Let's get three or four people and bring them in based on, you know, looking at their work and getting really excited about who they are. And even from that first outreach to a freelancer saying, hey, so-and-so, here's what is really speaking to me about your work and about your voice. And then, you know, would you like to do a project together? Yeah, okay, I'd like to do a project. Okay, well, it's just this little thing. It's, you know, it's going to be a couple hundred bucks or, you know, something like that. But here's our message. Here's what we're trying to say as a group. Now, how does that speak to you? You know, and try to have a creative process where people are coming back and saying, you know, this is what this means to me. And, you know, just recently it was, you know, one of these situations where a freelancer said, okay, here's six different directions we could go in terms of a design, right? I mean, you, me, the listeners, everybody goes through this all the time. It's like the first rev of some design thing. And, you know, of those six designs, the only one I'm interested in is the one that really looks like it was this person's authentic voice. And to me, that's more important even than if I particularly like the design. I mean, in this case, it's like, yeah, no, that's interesting to me, but let's just let that person iterate on it and spend some time and energy on it before we start to get into, you know, adjusting the kerning or, you know, the sort of micromanagement of the creative process. So I think those, in summary, I think that those are the sort of the three things. One is, you know, for full-time gigs, pulling people on who are really resilient. Along with that, if you're doing freelance, you know, try to involve a number of people so you get a number of diverse perspectives. The second thing is around ownership. If you're just micromanaging and telling everybody exactly what to do, it's not really a creative process anymore, right? That's just a production process. And then the third is like playing to people's strengths. And in the freelance world, it's kind of like, oh, well, this person, maybe they're just really not right for rock and roll design, or maybe this person's really not enough of a product designer to be able to do this UX stuff that we need, or whatever that might be. And in a full-time role, you know, that translates to trying to shape and mold and move people into roles where they're going to really succeed over time. you know, and having that be an open conversation.
And it is really interesting you bring up those differences, because it is, there is a difference between hiring someone who's going to work for you full time versus someone who's just a one-off, like someone who maybe on Fiverr, you get someone to create a book cover or a podcast logo cover, which is something that I do like to do for my content. But it is really interesting, that difference, and just that ownership. I feel like that's a universal, that's like whether freelance or an employee, you want to have that ownership factor in place. So I do find that interesting. And one question I do have also is, like, how do you have, like, how do you manage all this stuff? Because like HubSpot is a really big company, but I feel like even that person hiring a freelancer or a few freelancers can have this like hard to manage everything. So how do you manage all the people who you bring on board with you?
Oh yeah, I think that managing freelancers is probably a good deal more difficult than managing, you know, 8 or 9 direct reports. Even with a big organization, I mean, there's a lot going on. But when it is full time, you have the benefit of relationships. You have the benefit of body language, whether it's in person or remote, increasingly remote. You know, there are lots of ways to get, you know, you and I are here on Zoom, you know, and we're still able to read body language and all the rest of that. And you know, full time, you develop this relationship, and you can learn from your mistakes and kind of really grow. You know, look, I think with freelance, to the extent that you can mirror that, the better off you're going to be. You know, the more that you can have longer term relationships, I would recommend that, you know, because then you're not kind of getting through the initial personality kind of hurdles or even tool hurdles. You know, it's like, oh, we're on Slack. Oh, I'm not really that used to Slack, or, you know, whatever it might be. And just kind of having an easy, transparent way to work. That would kind of be my thought. But yeah, if you're constantly, I love Fiverr, by the way. I think Fiverr is like the coolest thing. And, you know, I've done stuff for music with Fiverr, including production stuff and all the rest of it. And, you know, working with the same people has had a better hit rate for me, you know, than just spraying and praying or putting a gig out to, you know, 5 different people. It's like, put the gig out to a bunch of different people, let them really do it in the way that is authentic to them, see what it's like to work with that person, and then try to engage that person in a more long-term basis. And sites like 99 Designs and so forth, they let you do that. You know, they let you invite previous contest winners in, they let you message folks, and you can develop a relationship on those platforms, which is really the intended use case. But you can create those relationships through those platforms. So even like you've never even met this person, you've never had a phone call with them, you can still have some level of creative intimacy. And in some sense, you can even use it to your advantage, where you're not in a room giving them feedback on design. That can play to your advantage, because you're giving them this enormous amount of ownership and really only judging it based on the final result and giving the creative a lot of room to actually create.
Coming up, we're going to hear the differences between HubSpot as a startup and HubSpot as a public company. But first, we have a brief message from our sponsor, Skillshare, who is offering 2 free months of access to tens of thousands of training courses for anyone who is interested. I actually have about 30 of my own courses up there, so there's a lot of content for me on Skillshare. There's a lot of content for you to consume on Skillshare, anything from, like, you know, dividend investing, Facebook advertising, digital marketing. If you want to figure out how to grow your business, Skillshare is the place for you. And you use the coupon code Breakthrough, or just go to skillshare.com/breakthrough to get your free 2 months of access to all of these amazing courses. Anyway, let's go right back into the episode. And it is interesting you mentioned how, like, you can still build that long-term relationship with a freelancer. And for my books, my podcast logos, I use the same person for all of that. So right. Even though there are a lot of people offering different services like that on Fiverr, I do use the same person for all that stuff. So it is good to build long-term relationships with freelancers when it makes sense, when it's possible, based on, like, if you see yourself having a recurring task that you need to be having done over and over again. One of the things that I do want to talk about is, I mean, it's interesting that you've been with HubSpot since it was a startup. You've helped it become a publicly traded company. What was the difference in mentality between startup HubSpot and publicly traded HubSpot? Like, what are like the new priorities, the goal changes? Like, what is, would say the differences between those two HubSpots?
Yeah, I think that the company certainly is different. You know, we're 3,000-4,000 employees now. When I joined, it was about 200. Certainly a very different place. The bright line of when things changed certainly was not the IPO, you know, and I give our founders an enormous amount of credit for this because they made it very clear to us that we had not necessarily achieved the goal by taking the company public. And it's easy to have the mentality that, of course, this is something you should celebrate and this is the finish line. And it's kind of like, no, it's sure, it's something to celebrate, but it is the beginning, you know. And Brian Halligan, our CEO, made it really clear to the company that this was not a Super Bowl ring. This was a jersey, you know. And now we have this amazing opportunity to get on the field and play. And maybe someday we could be, you know, good enough to even get to the playoffs or get to the Super Bowl or win a ring. But we're, you know, we have a long way to go. But we're talented enough to play in the big leagues. And that's pretty cool. And we've kind of at that point, you know, maybe we'd earned it, you know, with our customers and investors and everybody else. So I think that was really important. It led to a lot of people staying. So the team was largely retained through the IPO, and that was just totally critical. In terms of goals and general culture, I would say it's just evolved much more smoothly over time, where every year we on the product side, every year our kind of road mapping process, our product planning process, we turn the crank and learn from the previous year's mistakes and, you know, hopefully try to do it a little bit better. You know, headcount planning and recruiting, we're constantly trying to get better. Every quarter, we're turning the crank on that. every year, we have our inbound event. We do a big product launch there. We get a ton of feedback about that. And then we start the cycle again to, you know, plan and execute and get back up on stage in September. And every year, we learn from that. So I think it's more operating system tweaks and improvements and trying to keep the core of what we do pretty similar, you know, and we'll add things and we'll take things away. But being public is remarkably similar to being a private company for us. And the last thing I'll say is we've used technology to really enable that. You know, we've used technology so that all of our systems are more auditable and, you know, we're sort of SOX compliant. All of these things that you have to do to become a public company, we solved with, not all of them, but, you know, many of the big ones we solved with technology and with a product mindset, whether it was product or someone else doing it in the business. And I think that was really key, really scalable, and let us maintain our culture.
And a lot of really interesting insights there. I like the one where it's like, you haven't won the Super Bowl, you just have your jersey. And that's a good way of staying humble, even though you've got a company with like a few billion dollars in market cap. I'm not sure, it's probably hovering around close to 10 billion at this point. I'm not entirely sure, to be honest, but I mean, it's really amazing. Like, just the mentality you have, because I feel like some people could get drunk on the success, and success could actually be a big pitfall for some people, because then the ego comes out. He's got out. That's what ego stands for. So, I mean, it's really interesting that mentality for HubSpot from startup to publicly traded to where it is now. I'm wondering if you could share with us some of your habits that you've developed that you would say have helped you in success. These could be personal or professional. It's entirely up to you.
Yeah, habits and rituals, you know. I think the basic one that, I don't know if this is Stephen Covey or somebody else, but the idea of doing the hard, big things first, whether that's in your day or in your quarter, that's pretty hard to argue with. You know, if you are getting the things that really matter right, you can be a little less right about the smaller stuff. You can be a little more, you know, procrastinatory about the smaller stuff. So I think that habit of sitting down every morning and saying, if I can do X today, today is a success. Or even planning, you know, family life and work life together It's a great tip I got from our SVP of customer success, Allison Elworthy. And I said to her one day, I was like, man, you got two little kids and I got two little kids and we're working spouses. You know, you just always seem so calm. You always seem to have everything under control. What's your secret? And she had lots of advice, but the really big one was just be super intentional about your time. And so she has a habit and a ritual, from what I understand, of, you know, looking at the week ahead and asking the question, on Friday afternoon, am I going to be proud of this week? And then reverse engineering the calendar there to really make that true and then sticking to it. I really respect that. And so I've adopted that where it doesn't come as naturally to me. You know, I just kind of show up and go where people tell me to go. But I think that that's really brilliant. So like the weekly habit of sanity checking your calendar, what are you getting into? How are you spending your time? Along with that, looking at, you know, when do you have different types of energy in the day? You know, for me in the morning, I'm going to be much better at handling really complex, synthetic, challenging topics because I'm more online. You know, you and I are speaking in the afternoon. That's a great time for me to do a podcast. It's a great time for me to do email and be a little bit more contemplative, a little bit more reflective. And I've learned that about myself. Some people are, you know, the opposite or something else. So I think that that's probably the number one ritual. The number one habit is just this idea of proactive time management and being really detailed about how much time you're spending, who you're spending your time with, you know, and at what points in the day, what points in the week, so that you're really set up for success.
Christopher, that's a really awesome habit, really being intentional with time and planning also, because when you do plan, you do prepare for success and you're more likely to look Friday afternoon and be happy with what you've done. So really awesome habit and insights throughout this episode. I'm wondering if where we can go to learn more about you. We'll definitely include the link you mentioned earlier for your music. We'll share HubSpot as well, because we've been talking about HubSpot for a while. But where are some other places we can find your work?
Yeah, I think theproviders.com. You guys can check out the tunes as they come out. And then HubSpot.com/jobs. You know, we have open roles across all of our teams. We're hiring more and more remote. We have 8 offices around the world. So wherever you are, you know, there's a real chance that you could come join this team and be a part of what we're trying to do, bringing CRM, bringing, you know, all-in-one marketing, sales, and service tools to every business in the world. That's our mission, to help millions of organizations grow better. It's a very inclusive mission, very inclusive recruiting process and hiring process. We really want to meet you. We want to hear what you're up to, what you're looking to do. So check out HubSpot.com/jobs.
Christopher, we'll include all those links and more in the show notes. Also, if anyone wants to schedule a free call with BCI, you can launch, grow, monetize a podcast, markbirdie.com/strategy. That link will be in there as well. But once again, Christopher, thank you so much for coming on Breakthrough Success. It was such a pleasure having you on the show.
Mark, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Christopher, once again, thank you so much for coming on Breakthrough Success. It was amazing to hear about the HubSpot team culture and just learn more about the company and learn more about that transition from startup to public company. It's really fascinating hearing that. And for everyone tuning in, thank you so much once again for coming on. Our next episode is going to help you prevent some of the money leaks that are happening in your business. We think about growth, we think about making revenue, but it's not really revenue, it's not really money until it's actually in the bank. So that's going to be the next episode, stopping all these different money leaks and getting the money that we deserve. And that's the next episode. Until then, hopefully you subscribe and leave a review. If you haven't done that already, I'd be super appreciative. But in any event, dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today.